From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of May 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, CME Group will begin trading agricultural commodities 22 hours a day in mid-May. The EU may halt the import of palm oil and soybean-produced biodiesel. On the other side of that coin, the International Energy Agency suggests biofuels production worldwide needs to double. Hey, Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories, and then I'll tell you how seeding rate studies at the University of Illinois are suggesting a stand of 100,000 plants per acre should maximize yield for soybean. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures finished the day lower. The nearby contract in the May soft red winter wheat at 607, 26 and three quarters lower. July at 614 and a half, down 28 and a half cents on the day. July hard red in Kansas City at $6.30 and a half cents, down 26 and a half a bushel. The May corn futures back in Chicago, 17 and a half cents lower. May settled 642 and a quarter. July at 611 and a half, down 17 and a half. And September futures, $5.39 and a quarter, down 11. December contract at 5.31, your harvest month in the corn pit, 7 and 3 quarters lower. And the March at 5.42 and 3 quarters, down 7 and a quarter. May of next year at 5.51, down 7 and a quarter. July at 5.59, down 6 and 3 quarters. December at 5.38, down 4 and a quarter. May soybean futures, 17 and 3 quarters lower at $14.80. July, 14.85, down 18 and a half. August at 14.65 and 3 quarters, down 21. November beans at 13.68 and a quarter, down 24 and a quarter. In January at 13.61, down 25. May bean meal at 4.28.50, down $4. May bean oil at 54.33, 19 cents lower on the day. The August live cattle futures at 115.80, down 50 cents. October 22 and a half lower at 121.42 and a half. And the August feeders at 154.22 and a half, up 2.5 cents. June lean hogs 84.45 finished $1.40 lower on the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures finished are trading now at $105.22 a barrel, 94 cents lower. Ethanol at $2.17.5, that's 3 and 6 tenths lower. The heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.14 and a tenth of a cent, down 3 and 5 tenths of a cent. And the gold futures on the day at $1,653.40 an ounce, down $8.30. The U.S. dollar 79.14, up 0.31, and the CRB index on the day at 304.04. That's down 3.91 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service in Urbana-Champaign this afternoon. 40% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. Otherwise, it should be mostly sunny, a high of 86 degrees. It'll be breezy with a south-southwest wind at about 21 miles an hour, gusting to 28. And tonight, mostly cloudy. A low this evening of 66 degrees with a south-southwest wind at 11 to 16 miles an hour. Thursday, a 20% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms. Those will come after 1 in the afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 87. Breezy again with a southwest wind at 13 to 23, gusting to 30. And Thursday night, a 30% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, and a low of 66 degrees with a south-southwest wind at 9 to 17. By the time we get to Friday of this week, 40% chance of showers and 85. Friday night, chance of showers set at 40%, low 64. Saturday, a 30% chance of showers and partly sunny, a high near 83 degrees. Saturday night, showers and thunderstorms and 63. Sunday, showers and thunderstorms and 79. And Sunday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms that'll be mostly cloudy and a low of 60 degrees. Monday, showers and thunderstorms again and 73 degrees. We'll take a complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday, rather a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County and Champaign, Illinois, to take up the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Jackie. Welcome to the Closing Market Report.
Good afternoon, Todd, and thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's take a look at what's been happening in the marketplace, and maybe we should start with the reasons that things began to fold today. The wire services tell me that there was lots of long liquidation happening. What did you see?
Definitely. You know, at first a person thought that it might be connected to the fact that we missed the target when it came to the private jobs numbers this morning. But then we found out that the CME announced that the new CFTC Rule 3913 is going into effect on May the 7th already, and basically all that rule means is in the past, members of the CME were not charged the initial margin that a speculator who was not a member was charged. Now this rule says that they have to be treated like everybody else, and what that comes down, what the bottom line, Todd, is if you look at a bean contract, that means that their initial margin is going to be $875 higher. Corn is $600 and wheat is $838. So it just means there's less money available now to be able to do as much trading, and they're going to pull their horns in a little bit and see once where they're at before this actually goes into effect on Monday.
Oh, so liquidation came because of a change at CFTC, and we should bounce back then maybe tomorrow, you think?
I would think that we've got the opportunity to be able to bounce back. Really, nothing else changed other than, of course, all the talk about the new trading hours that are going to go into effect on the 14th. But I think in general, this was just a basic reaction. You saw it had to involve a lot of funds and maybe even some index funds because we were down just in so many of the markets. And usually when you see trading across all markets push down and the U.S. dollar higher, it's in relationship to some fund unwinding and just moving around.
Yeah, so it was a rebalancing act.
Right.
I bet that was a lot of fun in a whole lot of big offices in New York and Chicago and London and all over the world. I would think that would have thrown them into some real accounting friction.
Well, I think there's going to be some screaming going on because they gave them such short notice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, So then we need to take up as well, because this will have a direct impact on producers in some form, the CME Group, late yesterday afternoon. And we heard about this as early as Monday, considering a 22-hour trading day, I think in part response to maybe the ICE, which is an exchange based out of Atlanta, Georgia, coming on with ag commodities on the 14th day of May. The CME Group yesterday afternoon said, we'll do 22 hours of trading. And we'll start at, 6 o'clock in the evening Central Time and run until 4
Monday
the next
through
day?
Friday.
Yep,
right, Monday through Friday, but on Sundays we'll actually start at 5 o'clock in the evening.
So one hour earlier.
1 hour earlier even.
Than the normal trade, right.
That's right, than the normal trade. It's going to be interesting.
Well, it will be interesting. We were trying to consider what that might mean for the Closing Market Report, although open outcry remains in place as is.
That's correct, and I was thinking about the same thing, you know, just exactly when it comes to you always have to be thinking about your clients and margin settlement, and will we be settled to the pit like we had been in the past, and will the new positions put on like they are in the livestock pit actually go for the next day? You know, all of those questions have to be answered. But I think the bigger situation is what's going to happen with that 7:30 a.m. USDA report that we get every month.
That could be fun because it'll come out during trading hours.
It certainly could. I did hear a rumor today, I have no confirmation on it, that CME is going to go to the USDA and ask them if they can't change the release time to 10 o'clock, which would give the pit and the options traders the opportunity to be able to, you know, be able to be involved in the whole thing. And, you know, that's easily said, but the last time it took an act of Congress when they wanted to move it from 2 p.m. to 7:30 a.m. So I doubt very much if we're going to see that happen necessarily before this report that's going to come out this month.
I heard your discussion this morning with Dave Dickey, our director of agricultural programming, and he, I know, was on the phone with Joe Persaki, simply because I was emailing Joe at the same time, and he told me he was. Joe and Mr. Glauber and I think Jerry Bange probably all are sitting down to try to decide what is in their minds best for the U.S. farmer in this case.
Right, and this certainly does change the marketplace. You know, when you look at this, you'll never see, I would believe you would never see again protection because they won't have the ability to do that. The market will be open and running.
Well, that's what I was thinking because it changes for the end user. whether that be the grain elevator or the producer, how things in the cash grain market might work, won't it?
Oh, there's no question about that, as well as the investment fund manager. He used to have 2 hours to be able to go through everything and figure out what he wanted to do. Now that will no longer exist. And so, you know, I agree with you. I think that it was done in response to ICE coming out with their cash-settled grain contracts. You know, when you look at the CME, they're the largest futures trading platform in the world. ICE is second largest, and they didn't have much of a choice. I think the cash-settled might be a very good thing for us. We've always been asking for it, and it does expire. Actually, last trading day is the day before first notice day. That was a big concern of mine until I found that out, because
right.
It could really change things there, too.
Right, right. You've been, I don't want to call this an advocate of the cash settled, but you watched the cash settled commodities at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange for some time, and I believe that you like how that happens. Is that right?
Well, that's very true. You know, it gives you opportunity to be able to do things in response to the type of contracts that you place. It's just, and also, let's say for speculators, it's not a bad place to go to. I think it may be embraced by commercials, depending upon what their attitude is toward the market. You know, if they don't see any reason to be worried about deliveries, they'll definitely stay in the CME market. But if they have concerns about getting delivered on and don't want to be in that market, they may just go to the cash settle market. Make a decision based on first notice day. It's gonna bring about a lot of changes that we've never seen before.
I suppose changes that we'll have to consider, and which ICE contracts that we want to talk about on the radio too in the future. What's your best piece of advice for producers today as they looked at this down day in Chicago?
Well, I think that it's just another day that shows you that basically you cannot count on anything. You may say, I want to get $7 for corn. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get it. So I think what you have to do is you have to have yourself well prepared for this type of an action in the marketplace, perhaps in put positions, and at the same time give yourself opportunity to take advantage of a rebound that most likely will happen, but you just never know. Anytime you have to rebound from a lower price, you may never get back up to where you were before.
Jackie, thanks so much for taking the time, and we look forward to talking to you again next Wednesday.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Jackie Banks. She's with Stuart Peterson in Champaign, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. You can always hear her again, if you'd like, on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming, including Commodity Week. That's our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agricultural markets. Our guests this week on that program will be Dr. Michael Cordonnier, and we'll talk about both South American and North American soybean and corn crops.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Hey, Dave Dickey, your Director of Agricultural Programming, will be here in just a moment to take a look at the agricultural news.
In agricultural news, CME Group will expand its electronic trading hours in its grain and soybean futures to 22 hours per day. The expanded hours will leave only a two-hour break between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. Central Time, in which trading does not take place Monday through Friday. The new hours will apply to corn, soybean, wheat, soybean meal, soybean oil, oats, and rice futures. The change will take effect the evening of May 13th. The change coincides with Intercontinental Exchange Incorporated's launch of its own grain futures contracts, which will have longer trading hours. Traders said CME's shift is at least in part a move to prevent ICE from stealing some of its volume. Open outcry trading on the floor of the CME in Chicago will continue to operate between 9:30 and 1:15 p.m. Central Time. Daily settlements will remain at 1:15 p.m. Some floor traders have been opposed to a change, saying the expanded hours will further diminish the importance of open outcry trade. The European Union could halt imports of palm oil and soybean biofuels at a meeting of the 27 EU commissioners today if the commissioners decide that the biofuel produced from those two feedstocks emit too many greenhouse gases. A decision to halt imports of the two vegetable oils would be a severe blow to investors around the world, including in Europe, who have sunk billions of dollars into the production and transport of biofuels. A new report by the International Energy Agency says biofuels production, though, still needs to double worldwide to achieve goals with respect to climate change. According to IEA, biofuels for transport are not on track to meet their share of carbon dioxide reduction that is needed to achieve its goal of limiting the rise in global temperature to an average of 2 degrees Celsius by 2020. To do so, IEA says that total biofuel production needs to double, with advanced biofuel production needing to expand fourfold. Both sides in a federal lawsuit that could affect the use of hundreds of pesticides may be getting closer to striking a settlement. The lawsuit names some 300 registered pesticides and other ag chemicals and their potential effects on about 200 species. The lawsuit could affect some 30,000 ag chemical endangered species combinations in all 50 states. Settlement negotiations have been ongoing in the case since May of 2011. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Now, up next, you know, seeding rate studies for soybeans suggest a stand of 100,000 plants per acre should maximize yield. I'll have more from University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger. Farmers should try to set their planters so that the stand of soybeans ends up at about 100,000 plants, says Emerson Nafziger from the University of Illinois.
We certainly don't want to plant 110,000 seeds and hope that we get 90% of them to come up. More conservatively, I think 75% emergence is a good safe number. Usually it's better than that if we're planting into decent conditions. So people are in the 130, 140, 150,000 range generally, and I think that's about the right place to be.
The extension agronomist says there really isn't much point of going to 180, 190, or 200,000 seeds per acre planting rate.
It's sort of a false sense of security, you know, that we could lose half of them. Normally, when we have a big problem with soybean emergence, it's a really big problem, and we end up replanting it anyway. So putting out 20,000 or 30,000 more seeds at planting time doesn't really give us very much safety. The loss in stand from a 3-inch rainfall right after we plant is usually so bad that there's nothing much there to salvage. So I would keep that in mind as well.
The newer the planter, by the way, says Nafziger, the more likely the stand will be good even at lower seeding rates.
And the fact that we're planting with good planter units now makes a difference as well. Drills generally don't provide quite as good an emergence percentage, and the row units that we're using do tend to increase emergence percentage. In terms of row spacing, it's been sort of interesting. I've spoken to farmers that said, 30-inch rows for us yield just as much as 15-inch rows. And certainly there are cases when that happens. Over the last 2 years, we've done this comparison at sites around Illinois. On average, we've had about a bushel and a half higher yield with 15-inch rows than with 30-inch rows.
About half of the Illinois research sites show a positive response to 15-inch rows. The other half showed no response at all. It leads Nafziger to lean towards 15-inch rows for soybeans.
30-inch rows is a good system for soybeans, but the 15-inch rows, which uses the the same planter units is also a very good system. I've been guilty in the past of describing 15-inch rows as the perfect row spacing for soybeans, and in many ways it is. You get to use a row unit to plant it, which gives you generally good even seed placement, and then you get rows that are narrow enough under almost all conditions. You'll maximize yields from row spacing as narrow as 15 inches.
Knapsaker says it's simply something to pencil in when purchasing a new planter, maybe bigger, and deciding whether or not to buy the split row units. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the closing market report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. The folks at the Andersons Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, now on the phone line. Ben Stoller there. Good afternoon to you, Ben.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we keep seeing in the wire service news that spot bids are really jumping for corn. What's your basis today?
Currently at Climbers here, we are 37 over the July.
That's amazing. That is a big jump. I take it it's just because you're getting no corn in and you need it pretty badly.
Yep, that's there's some truth to that. We've not seen a whole lot of producer movement due to a couple factors probably. Up until the last week, great planting weather, so guys were busy in the field, and there just doesn't seem to be a whole lot of old corn out there.
Did your bid jump today too?
We did not raise it today. We raised our June bid today, but we've been 37 here for a couple days.
So you're now, 648.5 on cash?
That's correct, yep.
Okay. So, and your expectation, even in this time when producers probably aren't in the field at this point, they're not moving corn for you either?
Well, we're certainly seeing some more movement with, producers not being in the field, but not a whole lot of new offers and not a whole lot of new selling. So these are just contracts that have been made prior. Guys are just filling those.
Is your sense that the corn's not there or that they're just still waiting for $7?
Well, I certainly think that there's less corn out there than there has been in past years, but I think guys are tight holders. They saw, the basis rally last summer, got as high as 70 over in some places. So, and I think they're just in a decent cash position, so they're just going to hold on to their gambling stocks.
It make it tough for an ethanol plant to continue to operate on the margins. Are you doing okay there?
Well, I think margins are okay, not great, but we're continuing to buy corn. Margins are better if you have corn than if you don't have corn, put it that way.
What about bean basis?
Bean basis has really been quiet. The futures side has been doing all the work. When you have July bean futures near $15, at one point today we were, $15.10 on the futures side. They've really done all the work. Bean basis has been pretty quiet from option price, high would maybe be 10 over at some processors.
And your bids?
Bids today, corn to Delphi, 637. Corn to Climbers Ethanol Plant, 648. Corn to Ibeck, 636, and beans to Delphi, 1467.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ben Stoller with the Andersons. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the Ag Weather.
Support for the closing market report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's National Truffles Day. Truffles were known by the ancient Samaritans, Greeks, and Romans, who served black and white truffles as appetizers and in salads. The earliest known surviving documents mentioning truffles in cooking are in two 9th century manuscripts. By the way, a 3-pound truffle sold in 2007 for $330,000. It was unearthed near Pisa, Italy. On this day in agricultural history in 1883, S.G. Roberts, a member of the Dakota Territorial Council, convinced his fellow representatives to draft and pass a bill that would allow the northern portion of Dakota Territory to create an agricultural college. Today, it is known as North Dakota State University. In 1885, Good Housekeeping magazine began publication. Founded by Clark W. Bryan, the magazine was eventually purchased by Hearst Publishing in 1911. The magazine was a leader in advocating for the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act, which provided federal inspection of meat products and established labeling requirements on a number of drugs. The Meat Inspection Act authorized the Secretary of Agriculture to inspect and condemn any meat product found unfit for human consumption. By the way, the act was partly in response to Uptown Sinclair's The Jungle, a look at the Chicago meatpacking industry. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on the phone line to discuss the agricultural weather forecast with us. Drew, quite a bit of rain over the last several days, and now it looks like we're going to get a little heat, too. Tell me about it.
Actually, I think we're going to see a little bit of everything, and really we couldn't ask for better crop potential development here, I think, as we go forward through this next period of time, which will probably be a good 10 days. We will have a warming tendency here with temperatures getting up into the lower and a few middle 80s across parts of the region. I think most of the region will probably see more 70s and lower 80s, but nevertheless, we will do fairly well with these temperatures after the recent rain. We do still have moisture deficits out there across a part of the region, and until we get rid of all of that, we'll probably still be a little bit concerned, but as long as it rains timeliness, we really don't have to worry too much about the fate of some of these crops. Now, off to the southwest, there will be a greater amount of heat that will build up out across the southern half of hard red winter wheat country. We'll likely see temperatures getting back into the 90s as we get into the Thursday, Friday, Saturday time period. And some of that heat will try to work its way across the lower Midwest. But as it does, a new cool air mass will be coming southward as we finish out the weekend and go into next week into the Great Lakes region, and that will likely prevent the heat from getting very far to the north. We're going to watch that cooler air mass. I don't think it's going to create any big problems, but there is some potential that it might bring some more frosty conditions to the upper Midwest early to midweek next week. As far as rain is concerned, we've got more of that in the pipeline as well. I think we'll see a really decent mix of rain and sunshine over this next full week, and no real torrential rains. We're not just going to have excessive amounts of moisture and flooding or anything like that, but we just get a good mix, and we'll get some cooler air coming back across the region by this time next week, and I think these crops are going to look superb.
And they'll look superb. Will the western areas look superb as well? And when I say western, I'm talking about the Great Plains and the hard red winter wheat growing areas.
Well, you know, some of the reports coming back from that crop tour here recently has certainly given us an idea that perhaps a lot of that country out there is in very good shape right now. And I have to say that with the mix of weather that's coming up for them as well, I think it'll be a very favorable environment, too. We are expecting an increase in shower and thunderstorm activity, not only in the hard red wheat country, but also in West Texas cotton country, which we don't talk about much, but some of that area has been droughty for well over a year, as you know, and we're going to get some rain down there next week probably. But the hard red wheat will continue in great shape. I think even the corn production areas there in the Central Plains will also continue to see a good mix of weather that will support those crops favorably.
And finally, the growing regions in China, please.
Still looks very good there. You know, about a week ago, they had a widespread rain event that impacted all of their summer crop regions in the North China Plain and the Northeast provinces. It was actually a better-than-expected rain event, and we have very good moisture across the majority of China right now. Just like here in the States, I think the outlook looks very good, at least short-term for them. Maybe some dryness might evolve a little later in the spring, early summer, but for right now, it looks very good.
Drew, thank you so very much.
Thank you, and have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.